than I have over this year, the last few years. And even, I think it was about 4.5 years ago, we cleaned out weeds on a property there in Sheridan, about 12th. Now there's a huge, like, four-story apartment complex coming in there. 5 years ago when we moved to Edgewater, people are like, why are you moving to Edgewater? That's a scary place. Now Edgewater is so cool that on, like, MLS things, people trying to sell their houses, they say they're in Edgewater even when they're not. So this area is in constant change. Even driving in here this morning, seeing that big, I think it's got to be 10 to 15 story apartment complex right on Colfax there. Stuff changing around the lake. This area is just in a constant state of change. But what gives me hope is that one thing that has not changed is Mount Air's commitment to this neighborhood, to schools, and your commitment to this church and to the Lord. And that's what I love. In the midst of change, there are things we can count on. And this church gives me hope. So I want to talk this morning a little bit about some heroes in the Bible and what we can learn from them. And some of you, I forgot to mention this too, our two daughters over there, Anna and Nora. When we came here, Nora was in kindergarten. Anna was in second grade. Anna's now a seventh grader at Jefferson Junior Senior. And Nora's a fifth grader at Lumberg. So it's crazy how things change around here. And some of you that are older than me know that time speeds up the older you get. So I'm learning that. So you guys know how that is. So this morning, if you want to get a head start, you can turn to Exodus 4. We're going to look at a hero of the Old Testament and see what we can learn from him. But before we do that, I want to mention a few things kind of looking back at history. I don't know if some of you saw this summer, there was a movie called Dunkirk that came out. And my girls didn't like it because I watched the preview way too often. They got annoyed at their dad. But some of you remember the rescues at Dunkirk during World War II, that there were all these British and French soldiers that were trapped on the beaches of Dunkirk. The Germans were moving in, surrounding them. The best part of that story, though, is how they got out. You had all these little ships from England that went across the channel and rescued all these British soldiers. There was about 850 of these little boats that came across to rescue the soldiers. And there was a time span of about a week from May 26th to June 4th, 1940, when these little ships, together with the British Navy, rescued 338,000 soldiers from the shores of Dunkirk. And in the movie, they kind of dramatize what that was all about. But it was miraculous how these individuals, all working together, rescued so many soldiers. And then watching the news from Houston over the last few weeks, the same thing happened. So it was interesting. You can almost call it the little ships of Florida and the Gulf Coast. They call them the Cajun Navy. And I don't know if you saw the pictures, the highways going into Houston of all these trucks with these little ships coming in. And they rescued so many folks during Hurricane Katrina and then Hurricane Harvey. You had these little boats using their cell phones to talk to people that were stuck in their homes, couldn't get out. The federal government couldn't get in there. You had fire couldn't really get in. But these little ships, these individuals, private folks who just cared about people around them, came in and helped out. So what do these stories have in common? Both the little ships of Dunkirk and then the Cajun Navy. These are both just ordinary people using what they already had, joining other people, and rushing in to help other people. And when I think about myself, and this sermon is going to be even more for me than you, so just get ready. But when I think about it, what keeps us from stepping out and getting involved, even in small ways, I think it's that we think, well, God can't use us. We don't have whatever it is that we see these other people over here, the so-called heroes. We don't have what they have. God can't use us. Today we're going to look at somebody from the scriptures that in a lot of ways we've made out to be a hero. But when we go back to the beginning of the story, this person did not see himself as a hero. and he was making excuses. He thought somebody else could do a better job than he could. So if you can turn to Exodus 4, we're going to dive into this story. And last week, I think Reuben preached in Exodus 3. And what was it that God was calling Moses to do? Yeah, go back to Egypt, rescue all the Israelites, lead them out. And we kind of read back into this story. We kind of think, well, Moses was a hero. But what did it look like in the very beginning? So as we look at Exodus 4, at this point, Moses had killed an Egyptian. He had been banished from Egypt. He was once this favored child of Egypt, had all the schooling in the world, was kind of being groomed to be this great leader, but killed the Egyptian, was ran out of town, and he was lost, demoralized, living as a shepherd in the wilderness. So when we start this story, remember that about Moses. He's not a hero at this point. His world has kind of collapsed around him, and this is what happens next. So starting in verse 1 of chapter 4, and this is right after God called him in a burning bush and said, you're going to be the one to lead the Israelites out of Egypt. So starting in verse 1, Moses answered, what if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you? Then the Lord said to him, what is that in your hand? A staff, he replied. The Lord said, throw it on the ground. Moses threw it on the ground and it became a snake, and he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, reach out your hand and take it by the tail. That's not a good thing to do. Like if you're hiking up in what kind of the hogback or up by Green Mountain, don't grab a snake by its tail. Not smart. But that's what God told him to do. This, said the Lord, is so that you may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has appeared to you. Then the Lord said, put your hand inside your cloak. So Moses put his hand inside his cloak, and when he took it out, the skin was leprous. It had become as white as snow. Now put it back into your cloak, he said. So Moses put his hand back into his cloak, and when he took it out, it was restored, just like the rest of his flesh. Then the Lord said, if they do not believe you or pay attention to the first sign, they may believe the second. But if they do not believe these two signs or listen to you, take some water from the Nile and pour it on the dry ground. The water you take from the river will become blood and on the ground. Moses said to the Lord, pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. The Lord said to him, who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, I will help you speak, and I will teach you what to say. But Moses said, pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else. Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses, and he said, what about your brother Aaron the Levite? I know he can speak well. He is already on his way to meet you, and he will be glad to see you. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth. I will help both of you speak and will teach you what to do. He will speak to the people for you, and it will be as if he were your mouth and as if you were God to him. But I will take this staff in your hand so you can perform the signs with it. So at this point, Moses has been told, you'll be the one to lead him out of Egypt, lead them to the promised land. There's a burning bush. God's obviously showing up to Moses. And here we start to get an inside look on what is going on in his mind. And a lot like a lot of us, when God tells us to do something, we get a sense of God leading us to do something, we don't feel like we're the ones to do it. We kind of come up with excuses or objections why it can't be us. It's got to be somebody else. And Moses' first objection to be chosen as the leader of the Israelites comes in verse 1. This is when he says, what if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you? Now think about this, because you do get some crazy people these days that say, God told me to do something, and it's definitely not God that told them to do it. So Moses is saying, what if I go to these people and say, hey, God showed up to me in a burning bush and said, I'm the one to lead us all out of Egypt into the promised land. To us reading back into it that have grown up with the stories, this sounds normal. But think about it from Moses' standpoint. He thinks if he goes to the Israelites, they're going to think he's crazy, which is a very valid response. I go on ride-alongs with the police officers, and you see some people that are not quite right in the head. And I think Moses thinks if he goes back to the Israelites, they're going to think Moses must have not been doing the right thing in that desert, in the wilderness, and something has gone to his head. But at that point, God gives Moses a promise. And in this, he talks about three signs that he's going to bring to convince the people that he actually did tell Moses to lead the people out of Egypt. Three signs that convince them that was real. And the interesting thing as I was doing the reading this week is that God foreshadows three of the punishments that are come to Egypt. The first one is this rod. It talks about taking a staff or a rod. And in Egypt, the rod was a symbol of power. If you look at the ancient hieroglyphics, this comes out. So that when you see a staff or a rod, that symbolizes power. And then when you look at the symbol of a snake, this also is a symbol of the Pharaoh. So what God is saying is he's going to start to mess with the power structures in Egypt. And that's going to be symbolized by the snake and the rod. And then secondly, he tells Moses to put his hand in his cloak. His hand comes out. It's a sign of leprosy. And leprosy in the Bible, when it's talked about, usually it's in the context of somebody that's prideful that needs to be humbled. So what God is foreshadowing is God's punishment of Pharaoh because of Pharaoh's pride. And then thirdly, we all know the story that comes later of God turning the Nile to blood. And the interesting thing, when you look at the economy of Egypt, the Nile was their only form of survival. When you're in the desert, you really need the water of the Nile to succeed. So God is also saying he's going to impact the productivity of Egypt by inflicting on them in their dependence on the Nile River. And even on top of that, the Egyptians had made the Israelites their slaves. So God is also foreshadowing messing with the economy of Egypt. So you have that first objection, Moses saying, well, they're going to think I'm crazy. And God says, I'm going to convince them through these signs that it really was me. Then you have the second objection, which I always think this is interesting, that here's Moses seeing God talking out of a burning bush, and he's arguing with God. Now, we might think, well, if I saw a burning bush talking to me, I don't think I'd object. I would just go along with it. But here we see the humanity of Moses saying, I can't be the one. So secondly, Moses objects in verse 10, saying, pardon your servant, Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither in the past, nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. So Moses is saying, I'm not the one to lead him. I can't even speak straight. I don't know if some of you have the issue I have. It even happened this morning as we were getting out of the car. My girls are nodding. I tend to think something in my brain, and then when it transmits from my brain to my mouth, it doesn't come out clearly. I don't know if some of you struggle with that, where you think one thing and your brain's going fast, your mouth, it's never a good thing. Moses is saying, if I'm going to be the leader, I need to be eloquent. I need to be this great rallier of people, that when I get up in front of people, they'll just listen, because the words that come out of my mouth are true, and I have that down. Moses is saying, I can't do that. And then God, once again, responds with his promise, which I also think is interesting. God doesn't just move on and choose somebody else. God stays with him. And so God's promise here is, I will give you the gift of speech, and I will help you speak. So God is saying, I know you might not be the best talker, but I'm going to help you do that. And then a third time, Moses objects. He says in verse 13, pardon your servant, Lord, please say someone else. And here it says God starts to get a little angry with him. And I get that. Like, God gets a little frustrated with him because God knows the future. God knows how much more powerful he is than Moses. So God gets a little frustrated with Moses, but he also gives him a promise. He says, you will not be alone. Aaron will speak for you, and I will help you. So God says, you're the one that's going to do it. You're the one I've chosen, but I'm also going to give you Aaron to help you out. So what are the three things we learn from Moses and this interaction with God? The first thing is God uses what Moses already has. So he uses his staff or his rod that he has as a shepherd. Those of you that know the rest of the story, God uses that staff when he's in front of Pharaoh. He uses that staff when they're at the river and they part the seas, uses that rod. The rod shows up all throughout the story. So God uses what Moses already has. Secondly, God sends others to help. It's not like Moses has to be on his own leading the people out of Egypt. He gives him Aaron to help him out. And then thirdly, and the most important, is that God doesn't send him alone, but God's presence went with him and empowered him. So it was in spite of what Moses could do on his own, God still used him. So my question for you all this morning is, what has God already given you? Don't think about what God has given that other person and say, well, they're better at whatever it is, God will use them. What has God already given you? And then secondly, who can join you? Who has God already put around you to help you in what he's calling you to do? And then thirdly, are you recognizing and asking for God's presence and power? Even a couple weeks ago, God reminded me of this when I was feeling overwhelmed, getting the sense of there's no way this that I'm struggling with, that I'm anxious about, is going to work out. So I was driving down, I think it was I-70, and I was in the zone, anxious, worried about how this thing was going to work out, and God just hit me with the mountains. So I don't know if you all feel this way, but I tend to forget the mountains are there. In Edgewater, we don't get the best view of the mountains. When I lived down in Littleton, kind of closer to I-25, the mountains look a lot bigger. The closer you get to the mountains, you kind of just get used to them. Now, as I was driving I-70 there about Wadsworth, God just hit me with how big and cool the mountains were. And then I got this sense of, just like I get used to the mountains, used to how cool they are, I don't even notice they're there. A lot of times when I get anxious or worried, I don't recognize God's presence and power with me. And he reminded me, just like the mountains are always there, that God and his power and his presence are always there. It's just I get used to it, or I don't even recognize that it's there. So I wanted to give you a practical examples this morning, because I think a lot of times when we hear people saying, God is going to use you, God can do big things through you, again, we tend to think, well, it's just those other people. It's just pastors. It's people that have all that that I don't have. So I wanted to give you a couple practical examples of how I think God can use us. Because I think especially in the world we live in right now, where it seems like everything is chaos, especially just with the weather. Like, I saw something on Facebook this week. They had this picture of all the natural disasters going on and how we're supposed to be praying for Houston, for Florida, for the fires. And it was almost overwhelming, everything going on. So I think in the midst of that, even more, God wants to use us in big ways, but I think we think they're small ways. So even practical examples of how God can call us and God can use us is stopping and talking to our neighbors, getting to know the new people moving into our neighborhoods. I think a lot of times these days, there's so much online conversation that people just don't know people around us. They even say a lot of times these days, we don't even know people that have different political views than we do. So even getting to know our neighbors can go a long ways. Secondly, getting to know our coworkers, just being able to slow down and ask them how their day is going. And even I work now at Jefferson Junior Senior High School in the school. And even getting a sense, there are certain times when God says, maybe you should pray for this person. And I get this weird feeling of, well, I'm not in church. How are they going to respond if I start to pray for them? And you get that sense of, well, that can't be for me. But God is whispering and wants us to get involved and just get to know people. Even for those of you that work in retail or in restaurants, even offering great customer service, I think, is a way that God can use you in a big way. We don't know what people are doing, what is going on in somebody's life when they come in and sit down at our table in a restaurant. But even just caring for them there can have a big impact in their life. Speaking up for those who might have lost their voice. Like at Jefferson High School right now, we have a lot of immigrant families. They don't have a lot of power. They don't really have a voice in the system that's going on. Whatever your political persuasion is, even just seeing people as people. So we have immigrant students that would love to go to college, and they're fearing for their lives now. Oblivious of our political perspective, they're still people. How do we give people that have lost their voice a sense of power by speaking up for them? And then lastly, just by volunteering at a school near your house. In this area and all over Denver, poverty is dispersed. So even just by volunteering in your school, you can make a big impact. At Lumberg Elementary, we have a lot of retirees that read with kids after school, and they're making a big difference. Just by having people that love students, help them read, makes a big difference. So that can be another way you can be involved and that God can use you. So this morning, I just want to challenge us, and again, this is for me as much as it is for you, that when God calls us to do something, just like Moses, to recognize that God will give us what we need, that he'll give us the power to do it. Just like Moses, he'll use what we already have, the experiences, the stories we have. God will put people around us to help us. And the most important thing, just like with Moses, is God will give us the power and the strength to do that. So if you'd bow your heads with me as we pray and transition to communion. Lord, I thank you so much that you give us things to do, that even as messed up as we think the world is and gets chaotic with storms, just like the folks that rush into Houston and help with their boats, and the folks with Dunkirk that even when their little ships crossed the channel and rescued soldiers, I love that you use unlikely heroes. You don't use the people that have it all together, that are perfect speakers, that have all the right skills, but that you love to show up with unlikely heroes. And Lord, I pray that this morning that you would, in your small, quiet voice, give us ways that we can be involved in our neighborhoods, in our communities, and things that we might not think are big ways, but that for you, they are big ways. So I pray that you would give us the words to say, that you would give us the strength to do what you call us to do, and that we continue to use Mount Airy Christian Church to make a big difference right here in the Two Creeks neighborhood and at Mulholm Elementary School. In your name we pray. Amen.